Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
robotics policy. So what should we do, which is different out here in Australia, but perhaps in any other place on the planet, that we should be doing differently from our standard rollout of the old style education with robotics or automation software, in which there's sort of a very broad, much broader range than you normally encounter of skills, aptitude, interests. In terms of a subject, it's got a lot of opportunity motivators, but it's also got a lot of requirements for different expertise to come in, different equipment to come in as you need to do a different project. So if you are motivated, you've got someone motivated to research or go into robotics, there's a different sort of skill set that you require. So I'll give my background to my observations in this. So this is more a policy high level thing, and we'll stop and say why I'm doing the podcast at this stage. So what I'm doing is I've made an automated podcast engine which chops things off to YouTube, and I've been going through today just feeding it, you know, just putting podcasts on the chopping the line, and certain things improved, certain things were bad things I couldn't tell in advance. So there's a little piece of software which takes an image of a robotic control interface, which you could write up, but I wasn't to know that since, I don't know, 2000, right, using old software from 2000, around that era, using it, that it wouldn't have the colour domain to look properly proper on YouTube. So I had to stop and use some other off-the-shelf software. And the software is easy enough to use. You can use it through command line. But there's all this terminology that you wouldn't intuitively know when you're looking through list, i.e. like in HTML markup, if you want something big, you mark it up and write bold. But this doesn't work out. You can actually install a markup language to run with it called Pango, because I think that's a specialised Australian word. It's used many, many, many times in different unusual contexts. If you want something bold, you have to actually say strength. The strength is, it's got to be, I've really forgotten what the strength is, strong or something like that. Well, the strength of a font, sort of, you scratch your head. And then there's mogified. I must admit, I've been around on the planet a long time. I've heard of the word transmogify, but I've actually never heard of it. So we've got all these new terms coming in, taken on top. Indeed, you can get this engine up and running, and then you're looking at it and you're really scratching your head, what's going on here? So I had a little bit not operating it, putting it up on YouTube, taking a long term to upload. Then I had to work out how to actually set it up such it went in a codec and a speed better for YouTube. So that will come out, hopefully, in this podcast will come out more smoothly onto YouTube. But I sort of nailed it all the way down. This is just describing where I'm going at it. I nailed it all the way down. I found a little sub-VI, which is text substitute, which just physically didn't work. And this is why it remembered the old text and substituted some old text into some new text. So you can get an overall string of input file, output file, and you write a generic piece, and then when you get that string to pass in the command line, you pass it through one of these strip and replace things. So you replace input file with your input file, and your output file with your output file. It makes it a bit more sub-VI-ish. But for some reason, this particular sub-VI doesn't work, and it's a real head-scratcher, because you really want to rely on your basic subroutines that you can call up for how and why the subroutine is not using. I've never seen this type of error before, but hopefully we're on top of it. But it's actually also throwing me at the deep end to actually talk about robot policy. So, look, I can just sort of paint a few little pictures for you. There's there was, before it was disbanded, a specialist Macquarie ICT Education Centre, this little house in the middle of Macquarie, dead centre in the centre of Macquarie University, complete a robot class education room, which was predates the rollout of FIRST and Lego Robotics, and they'd have a whole series of kits. And what would happen is, because they set up a shingle as where the government, various organisations, if they wanted access, would pay off the government basically and give them discount sets and work with them on different ICT projects. And so this is a specialised stuff. The education department was funding these teachers who would take on classes. If you said you want to come up, you're a public school, you can use this setting for free. And you'd go in, and with a limited amount of time, you'd introduce people to Lego Robotics. They'd program and get things running fairly quickly in a lesson or two. I took, I think, two groups from Epping Boys High, and it starts to unfold some of the problems you have with it. So Epping Boys High is basically within walking distance of this at Macquarie University. I think it's 20 minutes walking distance, because I wrote out the stuff for it and evaluated this particular ICT support system. And it was good, because it actually taught me for the very first time. I didn't know what Moodle was. It taught me what Moodle was, and I was able to understand it, and within a very short time get support from Macquarie University and set up a Moodle, at which I set up the Moodle very quickly. This is an international one, and I realised very quickly, and so I set up an international Moodle, that is to set my classroom with a Moodle set in Peru. I think I was also going for South Africa before they pulled the pin. Macquarie University, the Mac ICT, were upset about seeing foreign countries log in, even though it was all safe. And I said, well, you're off the Moodle. And so that gave me under 24 hours to actually work out how to set up your own Moodle. So I set up my own Moodle at Epping Boys High ahead of the time it was officially set up. So that sort of thing. Look, the just looking at the big broad thing, there was a centralised computer robotics lab. Now the actual robots are actually quite transportable, and there's a limited amount of time, and it's the actual physical busing and supervision of students going in that had a whole series of strategic problems with it. And then I got involved with the establishment of the very first robotics for inspiration and something or other that gives that out first, but with Professor Michael Heimlich. As friends, now this shows that my brain's been completely fried. There's a professor, I used to walk across relatively often to Macquarie University and visit some old friends who were in different things. I really have to remember Alan Piper, Professor Piper, I've forgotten his first name, is it Alan Piper? He's now retired, but he knew me, and we set up, that is, I was the educational fox, it's called. That is a customer, someone who knows the product, is very knowledgeable, and set up FIRST Robotics, and we got the first teams to go over from FIRST Robotics, and then it established. So from FIRST Robotics, I could see one way of getting education going, that although this is very narrow in terms of it actually gets people who are very dedicated with lots of time, and they're a specific thing that they want to do, but they can have innovation, but the robotics equipment is supplied to them, and it doesn't necessarily get recycled after that. And so I've picked that up, and unfortunately it took a huge amount of political effort to get a class to go overseas. I remember 50 pages of documentation landing on my desk in the middle of teaching, and I just said, oh, I just worked through it page after page, and most of it is not applicable, but it's enough to do it. But so we got that going. So I, in terms of background, I know about the static, buy a little robot kit in a school, and then something in between, sort of buy a robot kit for a set of robot kits for a department and try to get that to go around. Then the various fairs. And so obviously I'm thinking something more successful than this. And I've looked at FIRST Robotics and been involved in that. But you really need support and buy-in from the principal and the people immediately above you. And if you don't have that, because there's political games or whatever is going on, they want to do something else. They've got their own friends they want to push up, and they're part of pushing up is pushing aside. You can't get going. So I think we've got robots donated to our we do, and they're just sitting in boxes. No one can use them, and that's indeed, I think I'll send this particular podcast to Peter Turner, who is selling robot kits to schools, and there's this big story about why it's not working. So I think we can actually say that robotics in schools, we haven't actually nailed that yet. And the symptoms of what's going ahead is a class of bigger problems which we have to solve in education and in Australia. I suppose from experience that you want to think of a completely different way which sort of steps over the locked-in problem. So it's one of the things you learn is that if there's a problem, it's there because someone likes it being there. And so they can do, we think we might be able to come over. Oh, it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of commitment from you to actually work out how to do it. So the idea of getting a whole lot of kits and stuff like that really doesn't answer the deeper problem of robotics. So I'd say my sort of robotic story was in your PhD, just automating the valves and everything, and the diffraction gratings and the data acquisition, and then in a various forms of I think I did, even in my honours years, I would just automate with a little PC, TRS-80s, that type of thing, the Apple IIe, get in the back, you can easily take off a few wires to operate various things and automate it. So in the old computers, it was quite easy. You could actually just take wires off the parallel port, address individual things. You've got, I think, 23 wires off memory, or easily 20 wires to address. And so that was sort of a soft way of moving forward. And I did, in fact, use parallel ports, if you can believe it. And you can actually get you could buy, back in the day, you could buy a card which multiplexed out to, so many other parallel ports. So these are things that you wouldn't see nowadays. Like you'd see a very old laptop which would have a parallel port to go out of it, and so I used that basically kit driving and actually addressed each set of coils in a stepper motor to actually get stepper motors to work back and forth. And so this is just a very simple thing, and I learned a lot of that by being a laser consultant for free, basically for free around Sydney. So I'd get to go into different factories and people would say, g'day you. This is, we've just actually taken over a printer to move, it's basically a laser up and down those DNA sample slides. So this is really, really back, primitive stuff. And eventually I learnt LabVIEW and things like that. Now, the interesting thing is that solve a problem, you need so many different things all coming together. So if you want a gentle force to be applied, you need pneumatics, So you need pneumatic control. If you want to do a big heavy lifting job and removing, you need an industrial robot. So there's certain things that you need to have happen. So if you just give people a kit, there's a limited amount of things they can do with a kit. And especially in education, it's a large investment for a single use, and then it doesn't get reused again. So there's all these things, and also it takes up a lot of space. So if someone has a kit, it's there year after year, or it's actually taking up a square meter of space. People lose contact with them. So there's sort of these general problems. So I wasn't too miffed and fluffed by going further into education, having a sort of a high point with getting FIRST Robotics going up, and then moving to school where things were actually much harder to do. I knew that in the long run that, I'll just stick my head in and automate some of my teaching. So automated web pages, production of things like that, automated seating plans, and here I've automated the podcasting and the linking it together. So a game, you sort of think of robots actually populating a factory. I'm thinking of robotics populating the social media space. So it's taking a big effort and while, and there seems almost impassable barriers, like the Facebook thing seems impassable. Getting some sort of interactivity is that seems impassable. But the general philosophy of the automation of it, which I can get there. So I have to produce this here. And so the story goes that I had this heart operation, sort of really affected your thinking and stuff like that. And just intuitively, I knew I had to really, really push myself to retrain my memory. So I'm doing memory exercises. That turns on that I've been under the care of neurologists who pick this up, and hopefully they'll look after me rather than my own amateur way of trying to improve things. So this is a way of introduction, is to say that after I thought, a friend of mine invited me to a robotics meet at UTS, a business launch of something called a social robot. And the takeaway story about this is that although I took copious notes, everyone else was sitting there, I was just taking copious notes, and I had something to do with it. By the next day, the actual structure of thoughts, the input I had in my head from looking at the social robot, disappeared, and what was left was a general view of some of the problems of social robots and a strategic framework that Australia should take to move forward with robotics. Now, one of the things that you pick up from, I suppose I am interested in strategies, a general thing, is actually playing to our strengths in the way that we do things, put things together, just to play to our strengths. And now, Australia overall has very few suppliers to produce anything. It's very thin on the ground. So if you want anything laser cut or water jet cutting, there's only a few suppliers. They're very, very good, or they were very good. Machinists are very hard to find. This is machinists who are just naturally good to the micron tolerances. If you're going to build these components to put forward, they're very hard to find, as opposed to, I'm told, other countries, the US, where there's a lot of people. These people are very hard to find, and you build a good relationship with them. So it's a different sort of structure, or the sharing of intellectual property. In Australia, people have the American model, but in general, the sources are so thin on the ground, capital is so thin on the ground, it's just best to share that stuff and just build up trust. So there's a much greater level of, trust, professionalism. Oh, not the US people are professional, but it's a bit more different. You know that there's no competitor about to suddenly pop up and take you over because it's just so thin on the ground. It really is a vacant land. There's not much here. That was by way of, there's different strategies here. And so when you hear someone's doing something and they're not cooperating or there's a limited amount of stuff, you sort of, the interest peaks to say, well, hey, what's going on here? Have they not worked out that Australia's very much a different, there's virtually no market here, like for high tech. So if we produce an iPhone, the size of market in iPhones is very small. It's changing very, very differently with these big online stores, and we're sort of getting onto sort of the online global community. But still, nonetheless, if you've got something and you want to get your business going, there's not a lot of local place to promote it. You can see a lot of things happening here. Looked at this social robotics thing. It was at UTS, Western Sydney University. It's been renamed, and as if by magic, they're knocking down bits of Parramatta. So Sydney is a complex place to lay out roads and transport because of the actual erosion pattern has meant that if you actually pull it up on Google Maps, you can see, well, this looks like a Mandelbrot fractal. There is this fractal imagery of Sydney and the actual structures that you see in Sydney are repeated over and over again in different directions. But as part of that, Sydney's separated into several centres. There's the Upper House area, there's Parramatta, there's Northern Sydney, there's other centres which are all growing out, dispersed. And this is Parramatta, nice building. I don't know where they get the money for it. They're just bang, building a huge, high skyscraper sitting up there. And they had this, the business school had bought a robot. And so this is interesting. And it was a social robot. I was really paying very careful attention to the dynamics, who was running it and all that type of stuff. Essentially, a social robot is a robot which doesn't necessarily do anything. It can't actually pick up anything, it can't manipulate anything, but it can have a social interaction with you. So it's got a face and eyes, and it's basically a page out of a Japanese manga, a comic book, and it's got white shiny skin, and it's identifiably a robot. This is to avoid the uncanny valley, and it can turn and do various things and talk with the various people. What I did pick up was that they have found you have to look a little bit beyond the data, because the first interaction, it's all positive signs. And then in general with kids, it's first interaction, second interaction, third interaction, there's a bit of a cynicism trying to trick the robot. And fourth interaction is usually no interaction whatsoever. So the first one is big surprise. Second one, bit of familiarity and working out how you could trick it to do funny things. And then basically what people want to do, in my interpretation, is have, for a social robot, have a story to say, well, I got to do this funny stuff. In terms of I don't think they've really understood the really essence of a social interaction. You have a social interaction, but you store that information to pass it on further on. So I think that fundamental aspect of the social interaction is there. And so they've said, oh, well, we can actually, this has got a niche process for autistic people. They can spend a long time with this social robot learning how to interact. And that is because they last more than three interactions. I really don't know how that actually structures. Then it came on looking at it. So you imagine that I'm there trying to pick, analyze through. There's a whole lot of business people there who were just laughing at every sort of joke set up or surprise. But the other important thing is with social robots, in order to work and function, they begin to recognize people and remember what they said, because there's nothing more annoying with a normal person. You go up to them and you say, well, my next problem is this. Now, we've solved this, and this is, it's got to know what you know. And this creates a lot of problems, because it is collecting information about you. It sits in the foyer and starts to collect information about you. Now, that's all well and true. We've got over the fact that this information is there. We've got built over society, but now this information is sort of like there's enough privacy problems already. I think this is before the big Facebook scandals came through. So that's one thing. Then the idea is that it's consenting to actually taking information about children. So this is all these unthinkable things coming up. Or what happens if a child says, look, social robot, I really like you, but these unsavory things are happening to me, I need help. You know, what does the social robot do in that situation, the ethical aspect of it? And then, yet again, there's the requirement the social robot at one group in Australia didn't work, and so it had to go offline to be sent back to France. This is the country where this particular social robot has been built. And they've lost it for several months, and I listened to it, and it was an actuator not operating properly, and they didn't know how to repair it, or they couldn't repair it, so they had to ship it all the way up. This is France is a fair distance from Australia, so it got me thinking. Now, unfortunately, I was putting it together, trying to write some sort of report about this, and what's more is that there's 5 of these identical social robots in different government departments or different universities, 2 in Sydney, 1 at UTS and Western Sydney University. So there's a bit of competition where these resources have been written, and there's research grants, and people are doing important stuff. So I learnt more about the in-depth subtleties of social robots and education from this. So this is, bear in mind, if I'm building up a picture, there's the practical experience with FIRST Robotics, the robotics as developed by the education department at a particular point in time, and these social robots, all of them are they've got advantages, but they haven't got they're not set up as something or which an Australian group can go forward. So I'm going to try and say this off the top of my head. What I think is that robotics has sufficiently different assets to operate, a sufficiently greater variety of of things that that people need a lot of capital, but for a short amount of time. So if you actually had to look at the lifetime of a robot, it's actually quite short. What gets me is that ABB, which gave me, or didn't give me, but I bought some 2400 bulk standard automation robots, beautiful things, these robots. But if they don't work in an American production line, what happens is that they've got to get out there in certain hours, or someone gets with a oxy welders and cuts off the arms and puts a person there instead, because they've got a unit to make. It's under warranty, so there's this 24-hour robotics service. So I've been in that area, FIRST Robotics, a general understanding, and also an understanding of strategy. So what is really necessary? Well, I think we're in the stage of robotics at the stage we were in the American colonies, when it was very hard to get books, and Benjamin Franklin created the first library, sort of a book club, you'd bring your books in and you'd swap them and you'd have some catalogue. So besides founding a lot of hospitals, he's also founded the library system. And that's what I think we need to do with robotics support in Australia. Should have a robotics hardware library where you can just get your bits and pieces, bits and bobs, standardise it such that everything's metric goes through, have various other things. And but from the library, you not only do you need, from a library you need books, okay, but from a robotics sort of library, a central institute, you need to come in. If you want to be privately tutored, you need to come in. If you're an industry, you want something developed and you want students to play with it. Not only do you have to borrow parts for it, sort of order the parts and they come off offline, but you also need to have expertise that you can ask about. This is a non-institutional, not aligned with a particular institution, and we're actually throwing up buildings so fast in Australia we actually don't know what to do with them, apparently. People are trying to building up things in Parramatta, and the places that we want to rehouse, the places we're sort of building places for places, and they're for museums and institutions, and they're actually quite happy at their original place in Sydney. Okay, well, getting back to it. So there's this general idea of rather than, yes, you can have, there's this beautiful advantage if you have the same robot kit. Everyone in a class can open the same robot kit up, and you've got the counting and packing it away and squaring away and storage. That's should still go ahead and possibly be available as a class robot kit, which you can order from the centralised New South Wales or statewide library. But that's a kit which goes out and it's looked like a basically like an encyclopedia. But there are other things where small groups or people with a particular interest can actually follow, and you can actually recycle the robotics parts, and this is sort of like servos, sensors and stuff like that, not necessarily to go in ahead of them, and there is actually a big wellstream of engineers who sort of bleed out of Australian industry as Australian industry refocuses, restructures. Or yeah, typically there's some sort of political thing going on. You've got a new management coming in from a bigger company from overseas who wants to squeeze up, send a head office and send stuff overseas, have a bit of a design team, whatever it is going on. You do have this generalised flow of expertise which comes out. So that's a different thing from the Project Pacific cradle to grave solution from FIRST Robotics, and it's a little bit of a different solution from individual groups buying robots and possibly getting low value out of them to a centralized area which buys a few sample robots, but basically a kit and resource library. So the problem is that with it's like readers, like you've got home baby readers, you've done that and you want to go to the next stage, or you're providing a spectrum of books so that you engage a spectrum of talents in the students and that the students can work as a community upwards. I don't think they've fully understood community learning with it. So that's the overall strategy for robotics, and 35 minutes. Sorry, it sounds awful for you out in podcast land listening to someone doing things like that, but I put it through my automation, and look, there's several things. It's hard to say, like you as you vault ticket, you pick up various things to remove, various faults to remove, and you think you're there, but really you're left with the next, so you knock out the, of 10 faults, you knock out 7 really bad ones, so those 3 ones still there, get it up, but it serves up a pretty scrambled offering at the end of it. So I'll eventually get there, and it's the long range plan, similar to this. The robotics is a some would say, well, why are you doing that? You know, isn't it better for, I can have my own robots, I can have an assembly, and I can talk about me as a robot person, head honcho, or, you know, why couldn't you just not spend as much time developing podcasts, but we'll just spend that time producing one good podcast at the start? It's, in both those cases, we're looking at the strategic game about, it's not what the solution offers, it's to the position that you're in when that solution, type of solution is in place. So it's not necessarily the quality of the exact podcast, it's the actual solution space of podcasting, this set amongst the social media track on, and then it means that if I do actually hit the actual sweet spots of what's wanted in social media, I'm all set up ready to go. But it may well be that the path to success in this area or in teaching is not through being popular on social media. It may well be there's other factors that I have to get going. The same is true for robotics. It may well be that it's not immediately creation of a large number of robotics scientists, but actually the actual culture is something which can really push us through. Now, hopefully, it's really almost impossible to ask for this to happen in Australia. If it happens somewhere in the world, they get a robotics library to run it. I think that will move our situation forward. Thanks for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.